Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome to an hour of Mind Power. We are having some phone challenges right at the moment. My guest, Jeffrey Allen, for some reason we've not been able to get to his through his phone line, and he is waiting for the connection. So something is happening, and as soon as we are able to get that phone line connection, we will be doing that. We're going to be talking about his fascinating and very unique book. It's titled Gone Away. And he's actually planning on a trilogy, I believe. This is the first part of it. It's called Into the Land. So Jeffrey B. Allen, we're going to try to connect with him, whatever the challenges are. Every once in a while, you know, we do have those things that occur with technology. So we will be, as soon as he is on the line with us, we are going to be connecting with him. Now, while we're waiting for Jeffrey, what I wanted to do was talk about an individual, Carolyn Lucas. Now, she has really been very much involved in what we call green activities since 1999, and she's won all kinds of awards because of her participation in trying to make a difference in planetary awareness. I guess that's a good terminology to use. And she's also the vice president of the Royal Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals in England and Stop the War Coalition. She's just been involved in so many different things. She's written a number of books. And this is a statement that she made that I thought was a very poignant one, because we're entering into the holiday season, and so frequently this is a time when thoughts of how we can make life a better situation come forth. And this is what Caroline said. She said, "I dream of a time when humanity lives in harmony with the world around us and with each other. Such harmony would make the acquisition of weapons of mass destruction unthinkable and lead to an economic system that, instead of destroying the planet, is genuinely based on social and environmental justice. But it's more than a dream. People are increasingly turning to green politics, the politics of life, and striving to learn and turn this dream into reality." She said, "For me, that's the greatest inspiration, that future generations will still have a chance to live in harmony with the world. So dream and act." I think that it's so easy to get into the slumps mentally. It's very easy to look at what's not working and to really take the time to say, wait a minute, let me be honest about things. I will look at what's not working, what is really stinking stuff that might be around me, and then I'm also going to be looking at what does work for me. I want to be looking at what really is happening in the world around me. And, you know, you don't have to go very far to do that. Let me give you an example. Having traveled over to Russia at a time when foodstuffs and items were not available in that country, well, that was an interesting experience. And guess what? We have got Jeffrey Allen with us, and I'm so thrilled. And I'll be continuing the rest of the story for you after we have a chance to chat with Jeffrey. Jeffrey, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. I'm sorry we had a little glitch with our communications, but
For heaven's sake, anymore in this world, if you don't have a glitch with a computer or a phone line or something, you are living an abnormal life. I'm just so glad that we were able to finally reach you. Your book, Gone Away, Into the Land, was intriguing to me, and I don't often get into fiction, but I was fascinated, Jeffrey, with the fact that you have such an eclectic background. You are a consultant for architectural design. You love to write, but you are involved with the Coast Guard. You still hold the license for that. You go sailing. You've been noted as the Holt Businessman of the Year Award by the Upper Bucks Chamber of Commerce. You have such a unique background. This book specifically is oriented towards abuse with kids. I have to ask you a personal question. Did you experience that as a youngster? Is that what motivated you to write this book?
Well, and in some ways it did, and in some ways it took on a life all of its own, because I became intimately fascinated by the feelings that were being dredged up. And then as I did research into it, I became almost incensed over and also fascinated by what goes on inside the mind of a 12, 13, 14, even a 17-year-old boy, even an adult, having not been able to deal with all of these feelings. Mm-hmm. And certainly I had some of those feelings that I drew upon. There's no question that an author of fiction doesn't draw upon his feelings in every passage. And I happen to be pretty good at that, because these sort of things just surface in me and have all my life. But what at the level of the abuse that takes place in this book, just to get the actual story started, no, I can't. In all fairness, you know, bless my father's mm-hmm. heart, you know, he wasn't physically abusive to me, but there were times when there was some very, very bad things that happened in my family, but not to the point where I could actually tell them as a story. So this is not autobiography. It's mm-hmm. not. It's not that at all.
Well, I know so many people, when they do write, there is that personal, to make it believable, there is that personal association.
Yeah.
If you're
yeah.
totally detached, there's no way you can give a
exactly.
sincere written communication and relationship with the topic. There has to be
exactly.
something there where there's an identity, and that's why I ask about this. You do something in your book which is not very common, and that is you go between the world of the imagination that is very real, as it's portrayed in this book, and then the world of the now reality as it's being experienced. When you got this concept, what was the trigger for this?
It's something that I learned when I was reading Hemingway, where he said, you know, an author always wants to try to go someplace that no other author has ever gone before, and with some luck, he may be successful. And I really wanted to challenge myself in all kinds of respects with this book. But I also, in the reading that I've done almost all of my life, I have always enjoyed magical realism and fantasy and science fiction and so forth. But I've always related to it from on a personal, very personal level for some reason. So I had to write that way. I had to take a real situation and intermix it with a world of make-believe, a fantastic world. And I had to bring in the characters that are floating around in my head all the time, even you know, as a child and as an adult, and bring all those characters in to make them help my main character along his journey in order to reconcile his particular situation. In this case, you know, it was the fear and loathing of his father due to, you know, this abusive domestic situation that he starts out in. But the book is really a book of hope, because, you know, things do get better. That's the whole thing with bullying and so forth. When a child starts to feel as though, you know, all hope is lost, and they have thoughts of suicide, you know, maybe they act it out in some cases, unfortunately, you know, they actually go ahead and do it. But things, if given time and given a chance, to explore all the different things that come as you become an adult, start to have some basis for relationships and basis for comparison, that things get better and you're able to kind of deal with this. And that's how my main character slowly peels away why his father was as angry as he was, what happened to his mother for him to be born and to have the place where they lived and have that domestic situation that they had. And so he just learns all of these things, and each time that I do that, I take you back to reality. But then, of course, I go right back into the fantasy where he has characters that are helping him along the journey to learn these things. And it became a fascinating way to just sort of perpetuate the story all the way until we reach a point where there's just a sense of, okay, you know, things do, if I do go through this process, things will be okay. I can deal with this. And I think that's the whole charm of the book. And so I just challenged myself, and I got totally into it. I'm writing the second book now, which is taking the story into the next level, where his family, he finds out more about his family. So it becomes a, you know, as an author, it just becomes a great writing challenge.
In the main character, the main character, when you start out with the book, and you are planning on doing a trilogy with this.
Yes.
You have a poem at each one of your sections. Your table of contents is very unique in that it's not 12, 13, 14, or 15. There's only 6 parts in this book, and each part is a chapter. So there's technically 6 chapters, and each one of these chapters deal with a point of evolution and a point of, when I say evolution, it's an evolution of experience by the young boy that you write about. And each one of them have a poem in the front. And in the first part, you have the poem, "The meandering events of my life grow as moss upon me. I am surrounded by translucent walls built of my failings, walls shored by foundations formed of my fears, walls that shield me from the harsh remembrances of my youth." Then
right,
this story, Jeffrey, and that's your poem, in the beginning, it really comes out with just the very beginning of the first chapter. It says, "My father's body was a mass of pure muscle, topped by a rock-like curly-haired head that hung forward from his rounded shoulders. If ever he stood straight, he would have been well over 6 feet tall. His eyes, his nose, and mouth were clustered below a singular brow that blended at its ends into a thick patchwork of stubble." You paint with your words very descriptive elements. And he was named the Beast right at the very beginning of the book.
Right at the very beginning of the book, and there was a perfectly good reason for that, and because that's what a 12-year-old boy would do. Because a 12-year-old boy, having gone through already, having grown up, we started the story at 12, so something obviously happened prior to that. So right away, we're going right into the hatred and fear and loathing that he has for his father, and it isn't too many pages into that section that the whole world, his whole world completely collapses. And so, you know, the book isn't filled with just horrible scenes of the father, you know, abusing the child and doing all this kind of stuff in a domestic situation. It quickly happens. But in order to paint the picture quickly and give the reader a sense of how this boy actually felt, because in those first 50 pages, you find out that he's a reclusive boy, which is typical of boys who go through this kind of thing. You know, they have a world all of his own. So that whole world is described as he's just sort of circling around in his own head, and this confusion and this hatred and all this, it just culminates in his own fantasy of thinking of his father as a beast. And so that's how he describes him. And it seems perfectly normal and natural to me, you know, and it worked.
Mm-hmm. So now he's got a sister.
I appreciate you reading that. That's great. Thank you for reading that. That was good. I haven't
Marnie,
heard that in a while.
Yeah, Marnie is his sister. Now,
right.
Having talked with people who have gone through experiences where a father, even a mother, has been very explosive, very much either they're an alcoholic or they're a drug addict, or even if they're not one of those, they don't want to be responsible in any way, shape, or form. So they take it out on the spouse, whether it's male or female, and especially the children, because they know the children cannot fight them back. And what I found in your book was a very good portrayal, as you've mentioned, of the way a young boy feels, because he doesn't have the muscle, he doesn't have the physical strength, and there is no way for him to be able to defend, let's say, the sister, the mother, the women that would be defenseless. And I think in my conversations with young males that have had these experiences, it hounds them because everything within them, especially when they're in the early teens, says, I'm supposed to be the man of the household. So there is a natural competition between the young man and the father that's just automatically there. I don't care how, even if they had a perfect relationship, it's still there because the young man has to earn his right of manhood by being able to show that he's capable and responsible. And here he is in this situation, as you draw it out in the book. He is not able to do this. And it doesn't take much for the father to slam him down. And that's very upsetting. What I found even more intriguing with your book was when you entered into the fantasy, and the boy's mother is Ellie, and when you go into the aspect of fantasy, you start out with a yellow taxi cab that's there, and it's just sort of hidden in a marginal sentence of description. And it's like it's in the boy's mind, and you just sort of float that in, and it isn't until later that you realize how significant that yellow taxi cab is. And you then go into what I call the Willy Wonka's chocolate factory environment, but it's different.
Yes. Yeah, I've been told that. Yeah, I'm good. I'm glad it's different.
It is.
I'm quite happy that it was meant to be different.
Now, with this, when you go into this other land where the boy is able to, for the lack of a better description, go through his initiation into manhood and seeing how, by his thinking, by problem solving, he's going to be able to take care of the beast. This land of people and personalities that at one time were peaceful, and it's like he's got to be the hero here. He's got to be almost like the Lone Ranger. He's got to come in, and he's got a sidekick, and it's not Tonto, but he has personalities that are waiting for him because they know that he's the one that's going to take care of fixing what's going wrong in this world of the candy makers, as you have them. It's just absolutely intriguing.
Well, if you really break it apart, as some have, and it's been fascinating to watch people actually break this book apart, and it's a parallel world. Things are going really, really wrong in the land, just like things went really, really wrong in his real life. And as he peels the problems away in the land, the fact that what the land is really doing and making, you know, wonderful flavors and so forth becomes insignificant to the fact that, you know, a 12-year-old boy might fantasize about something like that anyway. But this land and the villains there are very much doing the same sort of things that his father did in his real life. So he happens to be fighting two battles at one time, an epic battle in the land, and the other one a personal battle. And he solves them, and as the book goes on, and not to let any cat out of the hat here, but he manages to find some sort of reconciliation for both.
Mm-hmm.
And that's I think that's the point in the book where a lot of readers say, wow, you know, I didn't realize that this is how it was, how this was going to end up. But you know, it's a journey that this boy would go on anyway, I think, in his own sort of fantasy mind, just trying to reconcile these problems. And he peels them away one at a time, and as he does, he solves the problems in the land and the world at the same time. So, you know, it just does have a lot of philosophical base and a lot of parallels to things that happened to him. Like you mentioned, the taxi cab There's a taxi cab in his garage when he's in real life in the very beginning of the book. And there's a, he's working on a train in real life. He's making a little toy train. And, of course, the other kids in the class make fun of him and throw it around the room and bust it up and so forth, which, you know, would happen to a reclusive boy who people would make fun of, kids would make fun of. And that's a form of bullying. So there's all kinds of forms of abuse also that are brought out in this book, too. You know, the form of abduction because the Beast, you know, took Marnie, the little sister, and kidnapped her. So that was one of the reasons why he had to go off, and he also had to find his sister. So he had just a plethora of problems in order to solve. But, you know, this is the kind of thing that a child begins doing as soon as he gets into a situation like this and then moves to adulthood. Until he finally finds some way to do, until he finds some way to deal with it, and so I don't want anybody who has read it and anybody thinks about what the beginning is like. You know, remember that this is a book that leaves you with a feeling of hope that that things do get better if you just let time heal and if you just do the work that you need to do in order to peel away the reasons for why things happen to you like they did.
You have a section called The Watchtower, and I like the poem that you had at the beginning. Yet within me lies a primordial sense of comfort, blanketing me with warmth, beckoning me into a realm of contentment. The time has come, my battle against fear and oppression, my liberation from abuse and subjugation have arrived. Smiles fill my heart. Jeffrey, in writing that poem, and of course that chapter is titled The Watchtower, there is a lot that you are covering in this book, and especially it's regarding this young boy. But I think it is very symbolic in fable of the route of passage all of us will have to go through, whether we do it when we're very young, maybe it doesn't happen until we're middle-aged, sometimes when we're older. Regardless, we all have to go through this rite of passage. And one of the things about this 12-year-old boy is that he does gain that self-awareness that he's capable of resolving things. He is capable of making his life what he wants it to be. He is capable of taking care of those that he loves. And I think that, as you said a moment ago, that is a picture of hope. Again, though, I just absolutely love this candy land that you have us in. And these various, maybe it's because I have a sweet tooth, I don't know, but it's because of all of these wonderful flavors that are discussed and how, you know, it can, one of them especially, can become very, very addicting. It's like it never goes away. It just gets stronger and stronger and stronger. Like a chewing gum. And I thought, boy, if ever any candy maker ever got a hold of something like that, the gum that the flavor never goes away. I've never found a gum. Of course, I don't chew much gum anyway. But
well,
I've never found one.
Actually, that was a cake that as you chewed it, the flavor got better and better. However, there was an evil part to that cake, too, because it never stopped getting better and better until pretty soon you couldn't stand it anymore, and it wrapped itself around your tongue, and you were just going to completely suffocate. So, and it ended up having a very, very important role in the whole book. Because, you know, it kept on reappearing as sort of like this dangerous thing in the beginning, but then it reappeared as something that actually could be discovered that might, you know, be able to be used as a good thing.
Absolutely.
So,
and that's what happens in there. We're not going to tell what it is, but there is so much that goes on in the book, and there's also the ending of the book, and as you said, the people that have read it say, wow, I didn't expect it to end this way, and I'm not going to give any information about the ending. You'll have to get the book gone away to find out about it. But, Jeffrey, when you were writing this and you were putting it together, and I know we have so many listeners who want to write themselves, what kind of a tip would you give someone? Because you're going through what this, again, this is a work of fiction, but you are going through the parallel worlds. You're dealing in one world that's considered the world of now, and then in this fantasy world. What would you say to someone when they're writing, how, what for you has been a discipline that has enabled you to accomplish this?
Well, that's a really interesting and a complicated question. But you know, I teach writing too at the local college here in Bethlehem, and you know, the writing, the young writers and some of the aspiring writers come in and ask that sort of same question. You know, how do you get started? And well, the thing to do is to, with anything in life, is to break it down into its components. You don't want to start out with this huge problem in front of you, which is, hey, I'm going to write a 400-page novel. You really got to break it down. You break it down into scenes, and each one of those scenes that you have, you know, after you've figured out what your theme is going to be and so forth and your plot, and you pretty much have an idea what your story is going to be, you break it down into smaller sections. We all go to the movies. So the important thing for writers to do is to watch those movies carefully and see how each scene propels the story further and further along and propels the main character further and further along. And so he has to go through his stages. You know, writing has a structure to it, which is which really cannot be broken, but it can be bent and it can be manipulated and all kinds of neat things can do to it. But underneath it all, you know, there is a beginning and there's a problem that the protagonist has, and there's an antagonist that he meets up with where he can't get through, and then there might be self-doubt where he thinks he can't go further, and then all of a sudden he breaks through and problem solved. So maybe that's a simplistic idea of it. And I think a writer has to actually just take time to sort of break their story down into these scenes. The second thing that is the most important thing I tell my students is the characters that they develop eventually have to write the story for them. And it is so important. One of the things that happened for me is a funny story is that one of the funniest characters, the strangest characters in my book is named Albertson. And one day, out of the blue, I'm writing along, you know, about him and about this little adventure he and his group are having, and he fell off the cliff.
Mm-hmm.
And I jumped up, and I ran out into the living room, and I said to my wife, Albertson fell off a cliff. I can't believe this. And I realized I didn't intend that to happen, but I let it happen. And what happened after that, as a result of him falling off that cliff, was endearing, because this character just became very adorable, you know, and a very important character in the book, because you know he sort of ended up being the philosophical, crux, the mainstay in the philosophical aspects of the book, and it was all led through Albertson, that particular character. But
mm-hmm.
there you go, and then if they ever get to the point where they're finished with their book, whether they get it published or they don't, they should go to sleep every night or have waking times in the day when those characters flood back into their minds, just like a bunch of old roommates from college. They're just as real.
Mm-hmm.
If they reach that point as authors, they're there. And they should not
mm-hmm.
have any problem just figuring out the semantics and the structures of writing. As long as they can put characters on the paper like that, those characters will do what they have to do. They'll write that book. And so it makes writing a lot of fun. So I try to get, not everybody can do that. And the other thing that I do is I do not write chronologically. Stephen King writes just steadfast in writing chronologically, and that's just the way that he wants to write his stories. I like to go back and forth in time and sort of have some flashbacks and have characters doing things at different times, but making sure that everything is going to come together at the proper time. It's difficult to do, but it makes, I think, for me, it makes the writing a lot more fun and a lot more challenging.
Don't you find that when you go back and forth like that, that some characters that you have put to pen and onto paper or into the computer suddenly start giving you their persona in a different perspective?
Yeah, they do. They start to actually say things and do things that do surprise you, and you do have conversations with them, and you wonder, you know, what's going to happen, or which way you should actually take them. Should you fight this because that's not exactly what you wanted to happen? But because of the conversation that you would write, say, 3 or 4 pages of dialogue, and because of what the dialogue actually came out to be, might be a little bit unexpected in your analysis of it from what you started with. You need to go with that. You need to continue with that, because this is almost like a real life story that's unfolding in front of you. And you can't fight that as an author. You can only lead these characters in the direction that you want them to go, obviously, and do it in such a way that you're always cognizant of the reader, because you have to always want the reader to turn the next page, and that's mm-hmm. the craft.
Mm-hmm.
But so it is the characters aren't the writer. You're still the writer, but the characters are the ones that can put the story into the lap of the reader and really keep it there. And that's
mm-hmm.
I think that if a person works hard at the craft of writing, they will eventually get to the point where the characters are speaking to them, and then they're going to be they're not going to be able to stop writing, and then they'll be just as tormented as the rest of us writers.
and you're going through the torment again. I just love that with the character Albertson, and you're walking and your wife and said, he fell off a cliff, and she's probably watching the evening news or something very practical, and said, ooh, fell off a cliff.
Yeah. Yeah, what are you talking about? You know, go back into your man cave.
but she was a great supporter.
You know, it took 4 years to write this book, so she was a tremendous supporter, and she would read the chapters, and she would give me advice. So on the second book, I'm not asking it out of her, because it took a tremendous amount of her time.
Mm-hmm.
But I do have two really good editors that I owe a lot to. So I've got them working with me on the second one. So,
well, that's
so hopefully, yeah, that should be out next February or March at the latest, I'm hoping.
Great. Well, you'll have to send me a copy. Jeffrey, what's your website so people can go and check out information on Gone Away, Into the Land, the first book
yep.
of your trilogy?
Yep, sure. It's www.jeffrey, R-E-Y, Jeffrey with an R-E-Y, and then B. Allen. So it's www.jeffreyballen.com.
Okay. There you've got it. JeffreyBAllen.com, Gone Away, Into the Land. If you'd like a mixture of realism and fantasy, well, this is a book that will be absolutely captivating. Yes, it does dip into an abusive situation in a family, but the tale of courage and adventure that is portrayed in this parallel universe that the boy John goes through, I think, is captivating, and it will be something that once you pick it up and you start reading it, you're going to say, I'm going to have to read one more page because I got to figure out what's going on here. That is really something that you want to have handy to read, especially as it's getting darker outside and you have more of those darker hours. This is Donna Sebo, Jeffrey Allen. Thank you so much for being my guest today. We're going to be taking a break. We'll be back just in a moment. Don't go away.
Thank you, Donna.
You're welcome.
Enter the magical world of God's Kiss.
He sees a large open area of valley ground covered with a thick green grass. In the open space are many other children and animals. All kinds of animals. And all of the animals are talking. He can understand every word they are saying.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life, ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss book and talking book audio are only $19.95 plus shipping and handling. And the author Donna Sebo will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.delphiinternational.com.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Well, if you'd like to give me a buzz and let me light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight, here is the telephone number worldwide. It's toll-free. Give me a buzz at 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Well, the newsletter went out today, and all of the listing of the guests for the show for the month of November, well, they are up and posted. So if you want to check on BBS Radio, all you need to do is look up the Donna Sebo Show, and you'll find the listing of all the guests that are coming up this month of November. Speaking of that, tomorrow we're going to be talking food. Who doesn't enjoy that? Well, we're going to be talking with Nancy Hughes. She's got a 15-minute diabetic meal, but you know, even though they put the word diabetic in with this, I don't know about you, but sometimes I don't have enough time to sit down and really, I love to cook, but I don't have the time to spend 3 or 4 hours and getting something ready. It's just a factor of life when you have a lot of things going on, and I bet you feel the same way. So anytime we can find out about cookbooks or ways to do things that don't take so much time, I'm a strong believer in crockpots. I love them. But it's something that when you can do it and you can be aware of things that you can fix really, really quickly, fast, for your family, for yourself, oh, boy, does it help. And sometimes you may find one or two recipes that really grab you, that really you enjoy a great deal, and you don't mind having, you know, maybe once a week or every couple of weeks. You know, it wasn't that long ago, families, when they would have their Sunday meals, that's when it was really a big deal because mom would have prepared, depending on the culture you came from, sometimes the food was prepared on Saturday. This is especially in the agricultural communities. They would prepare things on Saturday so they could have the day off on Sunday. So a lot of things were prepared in advance. And then Sunday, maybe you got up and you had chicken or something like that because it wasn't common to be able to walk to a grocery store. You had to go out and kill your own chicken and pluck it and drain it of blood and everything else so that you could have it for the family meal. And it all took time. Well, fortunately today we have stores we can walk into. Somebody else has done the work for us and we're able to take it home and fix it up quick and easy. So Nancy Hughes is going to be sharing some of those quick and easy recipes. And then Brian Houghton is going to be our guest on Wednesday. We're going to be talking about history's mysteries, these fascinating things that have left a record, minuscule or not. The record is still there. The mystery is who, what, where, when, why, how, all kinds of questions that come up. Well, Brian is going to be chatting about some of them. And then Connie Joy, we're going to be talking about the real life event about the tragedy in Sedona. Yes, and this is where there were people that died in a vision quest type of an experience, and the story is an incredible one. Connie knew all of the people that were associated with this organization of activity, including the leader, so we'll be going into a lot of detail on that on Thursday. And then Beyond Reason, Greg Corbon, a physician, is going to be sharing the story about his 9-year-old son. His 9-year-old son and the experiences that he had with his son that before he died, just short of his 10th birthday, that are really amazing, and the gifts of love and of awareness that the son left to the family. It's just a powerful, powerful story. So we've just got a terrific lineup of people for the show, and I hope that you will join us and tell your friends as well. You know, I was talking about Carolyn Lucas and talking about the humanity of man. And that's something that I'm addressing in my newsletter this month. There are some thoughts when I was writing my editorial this morning that came into my mind, and I've shared them. So it will be posted up on my website, DelphiInternational.com, within 24 hours. My webmaster will have that up. And if you've received it, I hope you enjoy reading it. And if you have a chance, if you have to wait to go to the website to get the newsletter, then be sure to let me know what your thoughts are regarding my comments. But don't, one thing, don't forget to vote. If you haven't voted, tomorrow is the last day. This is an extremely important election. Don't forget to vote. That's your right and your privilege. Dream and act. That's what Carolyn Lucas said. She said, dream and act. And that's what it takes. It takes each of us being true to ourselves. And it's so easy to get stuck in, I'm not significant. How many times are we taught to think that way? You know, I was at a friend's home one day, and she had her granddaughters visiting. And the one granddaughter I had a chance to spend a little time with, and I said to her, you are beautiful. You are absolutely beautiful. And the grandmother said, No. You don't tell her she's beautiful. That'll spoil her. And I said, you need to know you are beautiful, and it will not spoil her because she really is beautiful. How many times have we been told by other people, your head is getting too big. It's swelling. You just don't give this person compliments because their ego will just go way out of line. Well, I'm not talking about a narcissistic personality, but how many of us have been scarred because someone has given us a left-handed compliment, as it's called? They'll say, oh, gee whiz, don't you look pretty? Yeah, if you lost another 45 pounds, you'd look a hell of a lot better. Does that happen to you? I've known people it's happened to. I've known people that have been so cruel and vicious to others, they couldn't give an honest compliment if their life depended on it. And why do they do this to someone? Because they're trying to manipulate them. They're wanting them to feel like a slave. They're wanting them to feel poorly about themselves so that every once in a while when they pat them on the head, they say, well, you know, today you do look a little bit better. Well, that's nice. So it's up to us as individuals to be able to take a stance to say, I count, I matter, and I'm going to invest in myself. And I know that I may not be perfect in everything, but by golly, when I do something, I do it with heart and I give it the very best I've got. When you do that, you're always in your own way going to be a winner. Because no one is ever going to be able to stay on top of the mountain of achievement and accomplishment forever. It doesn't work that way. People that climb Mount Everest, they can only stay up there for maybe a minute, and then they have to use an oxygen tank to get up there. Why? Because it is a rough environment, and you're likely to get blown off the top. So you don't try to hang on to your accomplishments. You do and say, okay, I climbed this mountain, yahoo, now I'll climb down the mountain, go into a valley, rest a little bit, look at the next mountain I want to climb, and then see what else I can conquer. All of this is what life is about. Life is about living. It is about enjoying, changing, expanding, questioning, and dipping inside yourself and maybe pulling out qualities that you didn't even know you had. I was reviewing some material today about a woman that absolutely loved to cook, and she really never had time. Then she and a friend decided to get involved with putting together some recipes for somebody. And as a team, they discovered certain things that were absolutely amazing. They're still cooking together. They've actually built a business together around food and spices. And I'll be sharing their story with you sometime in the future. But that's life. And no matter what your age, whether you're 10 years old, 35, 75, 105, there's always opportunity and a chance for you to expand the skills and abilities that you have. And that's something you should get excited about. Really important. And if you want to call in and chat with me, give me a buzz at 888-815-9756. Now, I know so many of you are looking for different ways to make money. And there are so many different job opportunities that are available, but often we don't know how to look for them. We don't know where to look because we're stuck in our little mental box. I can remember when I was working for an insurance agency and when I realized that that was not where I belonged, and I really enjoyed the people, but that just wasn't for me. So I had been doing my psychic work and I had been involved with a lot of activities regarding the understanding and development of psychic capability. But I also needed to have a daily job. I had a little girl. I had to be able to afford life, as all of us do. And I ended up being hired as an executive secretary. Now, I'll tell you what, that was the last thing in the world that I would have ever imagined I would have even been considered for. I didn't have any training in it. I didn't have anything there. But how I got the job is that I presented myself in the best way possible, didn't try to make myself out to be anything that I was not. And when I was hired, my boss, his name was Scott, and he looked at me and he said, you know what? Out of all the people we have interviewed, you're the only one I'm really interested in having take the positioning, even though I know you have absolutely no qualifications. And later on, after I'd worked for him for about a year, he called me into his office once. He said, what do I do with somebody like you? You always look at life as a glass half full. He said, I don't get it. So you never know. But as it turned out, I developed a newsletter. I did all kinds of things when I was with the company. But nothing really fit in too effectively with the executive secretary title. This is Donna Sebo, and I'm saying this to you, to not despair, because you may be able to do something that somebody else just doesn't have a hope or a clue of being able to do. So never put yourself down. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to take a quick break. When I come back, I've got some suggestions about making money from home. And also, I have a story about a liquid poltergeist. I'm not kidding. It's a true story. All right, we'll be back in just a minute. Don't go away.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Before I tell you about the liquid poltergeist, I want to give you some information about how you can make some money from home. Now, there are so many scams out there. Really, there are. And these people will take your money and they'll say, I can promise you this, and you end up getting burned. You don't want that to happen. So, first rule, be wary of too good to be true claims. You want to Google a company's name, and you want to also the word scam. And if that pops up, you know you're in trouble. You also want to look it up on BBB.org. That's the Better Business Bureau. Check that out. Also, you want to avoid the words work at home. And the reason you don't want to put that in when you're searching, they're not part of any real job title. So if it's the ad header, you want to know that it's probably not legitimate. And last but not least, I just mentioned it, don't pay for anything. Some of them will ask you to pay for training after you're hired, but a scam asks for money before you have a job. There are so many things that you can do at home. There are online classes. If you're really skilled at something and you want to teach it, you can sign up at limu.com, L-I-M-U.com, or eduwizards.com, eduwizards.com, and you can teach your own class. You can plan the course, decide how much you charge. Usually, for an online class, it's about $25 for an hour. And the site that connects you with the folks that want to learn about what you have to share, they're going to be right there with you. Also, there is an opportunity if you can teach English. There is a site that is looking for native U.S. speakers to talk with students who are learning American English. This is the site, idapted.com, I-D like Donald, A-P-T-E-D.com. And all you have to do is have a conversation with people, and no more than 15 or 30 minutes, and they are going to learn from you. Now, you can get up to $10 an hour for doing this. And then there are people that need persons to do cold calls. And if this is something you can do it in your bunny slippers. It doesn't make any difference. Nobody's going to see you. Well, there are two websites that you can check out. One is grindstone.com, grind, stone.com, and bluezebraappointmentsetting.com. Now, they hire people to do telemarketing services. So if you don't mind cold calling, hey, this is for you. They want to have you fill out an application. You have a resume you must submit, and they'll interview you, and you could make $8 to $10 an hour. Also, if you are one of those creative people like my guest today, you really want to get into writing, filmmaking, there is a site called demandstudios.com, demandstudios.com. They like to use freelancers to create content that they sell to big-name web portals like ehow.com and LiveStrong, or livestrong.com. So you have to fill out an application, and if you're accepted, you start creating content immediately. They'll send you assignments that match your interests, or you can pick one of your own, and they pay you either a flat fee or they offer a revenue-sharing plan. So you have an option there. If you love to knit and crochet, you've got an option with that. Favcrafts.com, F like Frank, A V like Victor, E, crafts.com. They're always looking for new craft projects to share with users and will pay $15 for each set of instructions they publish. If you've got a webcam, you can submit a video tutorial of your projects and you'll snag $25 for each one that is posted. Tech savvy. You can design web pages, and you can advertise on Craigslist or on your local paper site, and you charge about $150 for one page, or it can be less depending on what you want to do. And then also, there's sites, usertesting.com and userlitex.com. You can give them feedback. And they like you to do videos on narration. I mean, there's so many different things today that's available electronically. So I just wanted to share that with you. And I know I'm not going to have time for the poltergeist, but I did want to give out the job information because so many of you might be looking for something that's very unique to what your interest is. Like a friend of mine who is doing house sitting and animal sitting, and she's specific about what she wants to do. Because of that, we've told another friend who's out of work, who is a woman that loves cats. And I said, let people know you're available for that. It's amazing. Go for it. It's exciting. It's interesting. There's a place for you and for your skills. Donna Sebo here. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. We are going to be back tomorrow, same time, same place, right here on bbsradio.com. Join me for an hour of food, fun, and liquid poltergeist. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.